All right, tonight if you have your Bibles with you, I would invite you to open them up to 2 Samuel chapter 19. This is our 26th week in our study into the life of David. Now, some of you all weren't here last week, so we're going to try to review a little bit to kind of get you caught up a little bit and also to reacquaint our minds with what we've studied so far. But last week, of course, we looked into chapter 18, which was really a sad chapter in the life of David. David, of course, has fled Jerusalem because his son Absalom was successful in staging what we think of as a coup d'etat. And David fled Jerusalem, but he did not leave Jerusalem without friends there. And those friends would be a great help to getting him back to Jerusalem. David had the priest on his side, the sons of the priest who were messengers unto David, as well as one of Absalom's chief advisors was one of David's closest of friends and was still on David's side. In fact, David's advisor advised Absalom, instead of going after David right away and chasing him in battle, but to wait to build up an army and lead that army himself against David, while this allowed David in the meantime to build himself up his army so that he could get ready to stand against Absalom. Now, the people, though, that were fighting for David as it came time for battle, as we saw last week, they wouldn't allow David to go into battle. They said, you know, if you go into battle, they're going to be after you. And if they get you, then they're going to kill you, and that will be it. Absalom will be the ruler. So we're not going to allow you to go. And David stayed right where he was at, stayed off the battlefield. Of course, Absalom followed the advice of David's advisor and led his people into battle, which was, of course, a downfall to him because the death of Absalom, of course, meant that David would be king as well. But before David's armies, before his captains departed, his final words to his captains, which were said loud enough for people to hear, and that is when you get to Absalom, take it easy on him. Take it easy on my son Absalom. Now that word quickly spread throughout the camp of David and what he had said, and these men were putting their life on the line for David, going out to fight for David. And the fact that David has said, you know, when you find Absalom, the one who's caused all this, the reason that we're going out to battle, you go easy on him, take, you know, go lightly on the fellow, that was a motivational downer for them. Now, of course, we learned that they went into battle. We saw last week that they went into battle not in some open field, but they went into battle in a dense forest. And then the Bible tells us that more people died in the forest because of the conditions of the forest rather than died at the sword. So there was a lot of people that died because they were falling and hitting trees and this kind of thing. And, of course, one of those near casualties that happened in the dense forest was that of Absalom. Absalom was riding through on his mule. And we learned earlier of how Absalom had that great thick head of hair, and Absalom got caught in a tree. His mule ran off from underneath of him. He was there dangling in the tree. And when Joab found out, Joab, of course, David's most trusted captain, did not heed to David's request. We learned that he went to Absalom, stabbed him there. That didn't quite kill him. They got him down, and he had his armor bearers finish the job and kill him. I'm sure it wasn't a very pretty sight. Then they took him, threw him in a hole, and threw stones on top of him, which symbolized his stoning. They didn't think much about Absalom at all and what he had done. Now, the sad part, really, came at the end of the chapter, and that's when David found out what had happened to Absalom. You see, David's response when he found out that Absalom was dead was one of great mourning. And as a parent, we can understand that. You know, we can understand that even though your child may be into trouble, you still love them. You still want the best for them, really. If there is any other way, you don't want that to happen. But David was more than just a father. David was a king. And these men had fought so that David could remain king. And you think about David, not only was he probably mourning at this time, he has to mourn with the fact and the knowledge, remembering that this is because of David's sin with Uriah, the Hittite, and having him murdered, and of course, his taking of Bathsheba as well. These words were spoken by the prophet Nathan, and it came to pass exactly as Nathan had said. So with those things in mind, let's look in chapter 19, verse number 1. And it says, "And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom." Now remember, Joab had sent a messenger there to tell David the news. And it's likely that the messenger, after he tells David the news, then comes back to tell Joab as he's making his way back to Mannheim, which was where David was at, a walled city that was there. And the report of David being sad instead of happy was given to Joab. Now, of course, when Joab and the soldiers were coming back, they weren't coming back in mourning. They were coming back celebrating. That's what you did after you won a battle, after the Lord has given you victory. They were happy. They were rejoicing. And then they hear this news that the king is crying out. He's lamenting over Absalom. So it becomes very upsetting to the men in what's taking place here. Look in verse number 2 and 3. Verses 2 and 3. It says, "And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. And the people got them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed still away when they flee in the battle." Now what took place, normally as you came back from a battle and you won, there was that great celebration that took place, right? We read about that. Remember some of the times that we've read about in the past when they came back and the women danced and they had their timbrels in their hand and they made a great joyous occasion over these things. There was no victory party waiting though. As these men came back into the city, they came back knowing that the king was upset, and they came back with their heads hung in shame as though they had lost the battle, and they came into the city quietly so that no one would hardly even know that they arrived. In verse 4 it says, "But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son." Now as David wraps his face here, he's wrapping his face like any other mourner would. He's mourning over his son. And again, we understand as parents, but we understand that he was the king as well, and how disheartening this was indeed to his army, as they went out and risked their lives for him in what they had done, and undoubtedly had lost family and friends in the process as well. Now let's look in verses 5 and 6. It says, "And Joab came into the house to the king and said, Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters and of the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends, for thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well." Now, Joab is the only guy that gets to talk to David this way. Joab has been with David from the beginning. They've been through a lot together. And David appreciated the words of Joab, whether they were hard-hitting or not. His words certainly were hard-hitting. He's saying, listen, David, you've got other family. You've got other wives. You've got other children. You've got all these people that, you know, we went out to save your lives, who Absalom would have certainly had killed, and you're mourning over the loss of the one. Now, Joab isn't done. He lays it on the line what David is to do, how he needs to put on a good face before the people. Now, verse number 7 says, "Now therefore arise, go forth and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now." Now, David's been through a lot in his life, hasn't he? We look back and see all the years that he's been on the run from Saul, all the battles that he's been in. But you know, one thing about David, as you look back into his life, David was never completely abandoned. There was never a time that he was abandoned. He, as a matter of fact, Joab was by his side most all the time. There was always somebody by his side to help him fight the battles. He was never alone. But Joab says, listen, if you don't go out and you don't speak well to those that have served you this day, they're all going to leave you, and not only are they going to leave you, I'm going to leave you, David. That's what he's saying. I'm going to leave you too. And what he's indicating is this. We're going to find another king. We're going to find another one. Now David takes those words to heart. Verse number 8, it says, "Then the king arose and sat in the gate. They told unto all the people, saying, Behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent." When David went to the gate of the city, it signified that he had put away his mourning, that he was taking his place as king once again. Any mourning that David would do would have to be done in private. Verse number 9. "And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, The king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivers now the hand of the Philistines. And now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back?" Now, David didn't immediately, after Absalom was defeated, didn't immediately go back to Jerusalem. He stayed where he was at for some time, and there began to be this dispute in the land. You know, many had been very quick to support Absalom. They didn't know all the details of what went on. It was kind of staged in a way, many of the things that had happened. Others had stood with David from the very beginning, but David is now here. He's been there for quite some time. And there's talk among the people of why isn't he going back to Jerusalem and taking his throne back where he should. In verse number 11, "And the king, and King David sent unto Zadok and to Abiathar the priest," remember those were the two guys who alternated kind of the high priest position, "saying, Speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, Why are ye the last to bring the king back into his house? Seeing that the speech of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house. Ye are my brethren. Ye are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king?" So these other tribes have come down. They've said, it's time for you to go. But there's one tribe that hasn't come, and that's his own tribe, the tribe of Judah. They haven't come back to escort David. And David is appealing to them now, and make them willing to do this. He's ready to make some concessions. As a matter of fact, we're going to see David is going to be full of concessions on his way home. Look here in verse number 13. "And say ye to Amasa, Art thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me, and more also, if thou be not captain in the host before me continually in the room of Joab. And he bestowed the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word unto the king, Return thou and all thy servants." Now, when Absalom came down into Jerusalem, one of the things that he did is he made this man Amasa captain over all the army of Israel. Remember, David had left with a few, basically, Joab being their leader. And then what Absalom did is he took the rest and he made Amasa captain over them. Well, David tells Amasa, he says, "Listen, you are of my bone, you are of my flesh. You may have been against me, but you are who you are. You are family, basically. And I'm going to make you captain in Joab's stead." Basically, a co-captain with Joab. Now, what he was doing was assuring Amasa's support with the army that was there as he came back, so there wouldn't be any rebellion against him. Now, by the way, this doesn't set too well with Joab. Joab is not too impressed with this, and as a matter of fact, he isn't going to stand for it. We'll see that in the next chapter when we get there. As a matter of fact, he's going to kill him, just the foreshadowing there. Now, the request of David, it pleased the people. He was very, diplomatic about it, and the way he did things, like I said, he made a lot of concessions, made people happy. So they sent their delegation up to him. So look in verse number 15. So the king returned and came to Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal to meet the king, to conduct the king over Jordan. So again, the men of Judah left Judah, the state, province, whatever you want to call it, the tribe of Judah left that area to come up to this area to conduct David over the Jordan River. And what we'll see here is the fact that David used those people of Judah to bring him through the country is actually going to cause some animosity later on between the other tribes who thought that they should have played a part in this as well. We'll see that at the end of the chapter. But look what happens, though. David's journey home is just full of surprises, things we just don't think of. Verse 16. And Shimeah, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, which was of Beruim, hasted and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. Now, you might not remember this guy by name. He's not a very famous guy in Scripture, but you might remember his actions. You see, when David was on his way out of Jerusalem, and he came through this area, Shimei was the one who was standing along the road cursing at David and throwing rocks at him. I always think of Ernest T. or something from Andy Griffith throwing the rocks. Except for this guy had a little bit of intelligence to him. But he cursed David along the way, throwing rocks at him. He cursed him for a long period of time. David's men, at that point in time, they said, well, should we just not get off our horses and kill this guy for lifting up his hands against the Lord's anointed? And they said, and David said, no, he's only cursing me because God's letting him curse me. So David starts his way back. The men of Judah are coming up, and here comes Shimei. What do you think he's going to say at this point in time? It's quite interesting. Verse 17. And there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him. And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons, and the 20 servants with him, they went over Jordan before the king. Now, look who's with Shimei. It's Ziba. Remember Ziba? Ziba was the one who was the servant of the house of Saul, the one who was put in charge of the lands for Mephibosheth. He and his family were to tend to those lands forever. They were supposed to be doing that. But on the way out of Jerusalem, Ziba came to him with provisions and said, here, I'm bringing these provisions to you. And when David says, well, what about Mephibosheth? Where is he at? And he says, well, Mephibosheth's turned on you. Mephibosheth says, now there's no king in Jerusalem, so I'm going to raise up the house of Saul. Well, David at that point in time said, Ziba, I'm going to give you all the land. It's all yours. If Mephibosheth has actually done that, I'm giving it all to you. So, we have Shimei and we have Ziba coming with him. Ziba being a Benjamite, of course, as Saul was a Benjamite. So the question is what are these men doing here? Well, let's look at Shimei. Shimei had wished nothing but horrible things for David on his way out. But as he comes back in, look here. And there went over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over Jordan and said unto the king, let not my lord impute iniquity unto me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely in the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I come the first this day of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king. Shimei was the first to come. The first to come and to apologize. He came asking for forgiveness quicker than anyone else. It seems as if his apology is sincere, but you have to wonder if his apology is motivated by the fact that he knows that if he doesn't apologize, that when David comes back as king, that it probably means a death sentence is waiting for him later on as he returns to Jerusalem. Now, Again, David could have had this man executed right here on the spot. As a matter of fact, let's look what happens in verse 21. It says, "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, 'Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?' And David said, 'What have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah, that ye should this day be adversaries unto me? Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel?' Therefore the king said unto Shimei, 'Thou shalt not die,' and the king sware unto him." Now, by the way, Abishai was the very one who told David to let him get down and kill him on the way out. And David told him no. He's the first one to speak up over the account here. And you can tell that this fellow, Abishai, doesn't care much for, Shimei here. Boy, their names get confusing after a while. Now, David tells Shimei he's not going to kill him. It doesn't mean he's not going to be punished, because he will be punished. As a matter of fact, we're not going to find it until a lot later from now. But as David is getting ready to die and Solomon is becoming king, he tells Solomon that he needs to take care of what had taken place back here. And what Solomon does is Solomon tells Shimei over what he's done. He is confined to the city of Jerusalem. He's not allowed to leave Jerusalem for anything, kind of like under house arrest. But the day that he leaves Jerusalem, he would be put to death. Now, Shimei was okay with that. He agreed to the sentence before him. Turns out that a couple of Shimei's servants will flee from his presence, and he'll go out to get them, bring them back. They were slaves, basically. So he went out to get them. When he returned to Jerusalem, Solomon had him executed for what he had done, for leaving Jerusalem. But now, someone else comes into the picture here. Someone else we know very well. So as they go a little further, verse 24, it says, "And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace." Mephibosheth came to meet David, and his appearance was one who had been greatly mourning over the departure of David. Far different from what was told to David when he left there by Ziba. Now, his sincerity is seemingly pretty obvious at this point. But in verse 25 it says, "And it came to pass, when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, 'Wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth?'" Now David's answer, or David's question, seems like one that is a good question, right? It's an honest question. He's basically saying, "Mephibosheth, after all that I've done for you, after everything that I've done, why would you go against me? Why would you go against me?" Now Mephibosheth tells David what really happened. The rest of the story. Verse 26, "And he answered, 'My lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass, and I will ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame. And he hath slandered thy servant unto my lord the king. But my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king, yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right, therefore, have I yet to cry any more unto the king?" Mephibosheth thought Ziba was going to do something good. Ziba instead went and turned on Mephibosheth instead and made him out to be the enemy. Mephibosheth, of course, declares his innocence. He praises David for all that he's done, all that he's taken care of, and tells David that he has done so much for him that he has no right to ask David for anything else. In verse 29, "And the king said unto him, Why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, Thou and Ziba divide the land." Remember, the land was all Mephibosheth's. Then he took it away and gave it to Ziba. And now he tells Mephibosheth he's dividing the land between him and Ziba. This seems like a quick decision on David. It's long been looked at as one that wasn't done in good judgment. But you know one thing about it, we weren't there. We don't know exactly all the circumstances. Perhaps David had a reason to doubt the story of Mephibosheth and found it more as one man's word against another. In that case, he split it 50-50. But David, though, also shows a side of that leniency as he's coming into the land to Jerusalem. Once again, that spirit of compromise that was with him. Ziba was a man of prominence in the tribe of Benjamin. He had a lot of connections, and right now David did not want to cause any friction with any connections. There was already division in Israel over him being king. David did not want to lend to any of those things. Now, you might think Mephibosheth, of course, would be upset over the fact that, you know, all these lands belonged to Mephibosheth, and now he had halved them there with Ziba. But that wasn't what took place at all. Look here, verse number 30. "And Mephibosheth said unto the king, Yea, let him take all. For as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house." Mephibosheth didn't care about the land. He didn't care about the household, all of those things, the vineyards that were on him. His true loyalty to David was shown right here. He said, "I don't want it. That's not what I want. I want you to be king. You cared for me. I care for you." Now, let's move on. Verse number 31. "And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogelim and went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan." Now, Barzillai was a very aged man that was 80 years old and had provided the king sustenance while he lay at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. So this man was of great wealth. He had a lot of money. And when David and his men were there, the thousands of men that he had, he helped supply their needs, feed them, and take care of them. He's 80 years old, and he's going part of the way down with David. And David desires him to come all the way down to Jerusalem. Now, look here, we're going to read several verses this time. Verse number 33, "And the king said unto Barzillai, Come thou over with me, I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem. And Barzillai said unto the king, How long have I to live that I should go up with the king unto Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old, and can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant yet be a burden unto my lord the king? And thy servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king, and why should the king recompense it me with such a reward? Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in mine own city, and be buried in the grave of my father and of my mother. But behold, thy servant Chimham, let him go over with my lord the king, and do to him what shall seem good unto thee." David desired this man to come back, to live in Jerusalem, to stay with him, basically eat at his table. He was going to reward him for all that he had done. He tells David, "I'm too old for all of that. I got everything I need. I want to go back to my house, die in my hometown, be buried with my family. That's what I want to do. But I have a son." That's his son. It's mentioned here, Chimham. That's his son. "I got a son. You take him. Do unto him what you do unto me." So, he goes on to tell us in verse 38, "The king answered, Chimham shall go over with me, and I will do to him that which shall seem good unto thee. And whatsoever thou shalt require of me, that will I do for thee. And all the people went over Jordan, and when the king was come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own place. Then the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him, and all the people of Judah conducted the king, as also half the people of Israel. So you got Judah coming down, escorting David down, and you've got some people of Israel coming as well. And that's probably the ones that were all with him already as he was coming. But look what it says here in verse number 41. We're going to read through verse 43 and finish out the chapter, because it sets up chapter 20 here in these verses. It says, "And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said unto the king, Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away, and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan? And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, Because the king is near of kin to us. Wherefore then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten of all the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, We have 10 parts in the king, and we have also more right in David than ye. Why then did ye despise us, that our advice should not be firsthand in bringing back our king? And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel." These men thought that they should be the one conducting David down. They should be the ones who are leading the parade basically back to Jerusalem. They're saying, "Why haven't you let us do that? You know, there's 10 tribes up here. There's just 2 of you down there. Why do you think that you have the ability to do that instead of doing it with us?" Now, that hardly seems worth mentioning. Doesn't seem like a big deal, but it becomes a big deal. There's a lot of jealousy that takes place, and it sparks rebellion in chapter number 20. But that we'll get to in about 3 weeks after our couple weeks of Bible study here. So we'll end there tonight. We want to just go ahead and dismiss in prayer tonight. Let's all stand, and Brother Randy, will you lead us in prayer?